Welcome to the Oddity Archive with Evan and David. You have your new laptop now, right? What's the status of that?
So new audio setup. Just got my feng shui a little nicer. No laptop yet.
Okay.
Because I went onto the Apple website to try and buy it.
Yeah.
But my Apple card doesn't have enough of a limit to buy the laptop because I wanted to get the cash back for buying it.
Yeah.
And you can't split it up onto debit or credit cards or whatever on their website anymore. You used to be able to do that. So I got all hyped up. I went on there to buy it finally, and then I couldn't do that. So now I need to go into a store and talk to an Apple genius.
I mean, I don't want to get into your finances, but
dig deep.
How expensive is this laptop that so, your like maximum limit on a credit card is not enough?
I asked if they had the gold pleated version there. No, it's mostly like everything I do audio and video wise, you kind of just have to get like the beefed out one.
Yeah.
And I go a little overkill, but I buy a laptop once every like 10 years. So anytime I do, I'm just like, all right, if I'm going to use this thing every day and for like all my hobbies, you know, I'll just get like the Rolls Royce version of it.
Gotta get the best.
Yeah. And then I hold on to it for 10 years. And then in the 10th year, it's like on fire. And as we've seen in many episodes, just quits functioning.
You're like, all right, time to take out a personal loan.
Yep. I'm like, all right, it's either vacation or more podcast episodes. And so far, it's been podcast episodes. So I'll let Jess know the Italy trip's got to wait because we needed to talk about cryptids.
Laptop or get my cavities filled.
Yeah. Right.
Oh, God. Just warning you and everybody listening tonight is going to be the worst episode of the podcast.
Oh, right. The lower we set the bar, the easier it is to come in just above it.
I slept incredibly poorly last night. I think I had some paranormal activity at the house.
Okay.
So at 3 a.m. on the dot, our smoke detectors went off.
Isn't that the Hour of Trinity?
Yeah, the witching hour.
Witching hour. That's what it was. Okay.
The hour of the Trinity. 3 a.m. on the dot, smoke detectors went off. And like in my house, they're all wired together. So if one goes off, they all go off.
Okay.
And it's like deafeningly loud. And they went off for like literally 10, maybe 15 seconds. And then the alarms turned off and never came back on. So that was weird.
And you have a dog too. Like my cats will just go freak out and hide. But I feel like dogs will just get ramped up and go apeshit.
Normally that would happen. My dog is 11 years old now, so I'm not sure she even heard it.
Yeah, that's fair.
And she can barely jump off the bed anyways, so it's probably for the best that she didn't move.
Just rides it out, yeah.
Yeah. And so Lauren gets up, checks on the kids, dog's in our bed, and then also we have a hamster.
Oh.
And for some reason, she's like, oh, I need to check on the hamster too. So she goes, checks on the hamster.
High stress animal.
Yeah. She does that while I don't have a big house, but walk through every area of the house and look in the garage, just make sure that there's nothing on fire. There's no smoke anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And so I do that. She does her thing. We get back in bed. And then I get up for work at about 5:30, 5:45, and then I'm out the door a little after 6.
Mm-hmm.
I get ready. I go out of our bedroom, and that opens like into the loft area upstairs in my house.
Right.
And in the loft area is where the hamster is. Hamster cage wide open, hamster gone.
Okay.
So I'm like, what in the world? How could this hamster have escaped in the last 3 hours?
He triggered the alarm. He's my first suspect.
Right? After Lauren checked on the hamster to make sure he was okay or she was okay.
Yeah.
I stay as long as I can because I got to go to work. I'm searching, you know, we searched 20, 30 minutes or so. Can't find the hamster at all. All that to say, I'm very tired right now. I did, though. I think on one of these episodes, we talked about my ability to commune with birds. Are you frozen? All right, everybody. Evan just froze while I was ranting. I was wondering why he wasn't cutting in as often. So now I'm trying to rejoin and hopefully we can get the podcast going again.
The new setup's going great. Either my computer was like, yo, quit talking about me, or your hamster pulled the plug. I don't know, one or the other.
I was talking for a good 2 minutes before I noticed.
All of a sudden you started like slowing down and I was like, I don't know if this is a him or me problem. And then my audio software imploded. So
the fire alarm. My hamster was out and about.
Okay, but we seem to be doing a little better here. So let me resize my little David window, as I call it. All right. Okay. So before everything blew up, your hamster may or may not have pulled the fire alarm and is on the loose.
Everybody that was hanging on the edge of their seats, we did find the hamster. Don't tell me this happened again.
Hold on. Sorry. I'm making sure. Let me make sure that's recorded.
Were you just sitting that still?
I'm very statuesque.
Oh my God. So for everybody that's concerned about the hamster, we did find the hamster.
Okay.
I think in one of these episodes, I talked about my ability to commune with birds.
That's the previous one. Yeah.
Okay. And so I decided, you know what? I got to just give it a shot. Mm-hmm. So I went upstairs where its cage is.
Yeah.
And I said the hamster's name a few times.
Which is?
Heart.
Oh, okay.
It was a Christmas present. Santa brought the kids. Mm-hmm. And when we came down, we asked the kids, well, what should we name it? And my daughter, the first word out of her mouth was heart.
Okay. Is she a big Captain America fan? Is that where that's coming
from?
Oh,
yeah. Huge.
Seminal.
I don't know how that makes sense. But
Earth, wind, fire, heart. They all put their...
Captain Planet.
What did I say?
You said Captain America.
Oh, yeah. Different guy. I meant the green one with blue hair.
Yeah. So I went up and just like sat near where her cage is, said her name a few times, and then I sat real still and I just focused on sort of remote viewing the hamster.
Okay.
And like literally 10 seconds into it, I hear a rustling in the closet near me. And I was like, oh my God. And I look over and her like little hamster paws under the door, like swiping at the door frame. I was like, it's happening. We found the hamster.
Did the fire alarm? It was just like, I'm getting out of here.
I don't know what's going on with the fire alarm. Okay. Yeah, I don't know. I think maybe it was a demon. We need to sage the house.
Yep. That's step one.
I don't know what was going on with it.
Okay. So out of all that, I'm mostly curious more than about the ghost.
Okay.
How do you know the hamster's gender?
Because Santa sent me a letter saying that he only gives out female hamsters.
Okay. Should I? I'm afraid to ask why, but.
Yeah. To my knowledge, now we got this hamster from Santa. To my knowledge, pet stores only sell female hamsters.
Okay. Interesting.
Yeah.
The men are too worked up.
Probably. So that's how I know that bit of information.
Okay.
All right. So are you ready to hear about a missing persons case?
I am. Have we?
I think this is the first.
We had one before.
Missing persons case. Yeah. I mean, we had Larry Bader.
Yeah, but he kind of self-selected.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm ready.
This one, I will say, I had some moral or ethical qualms about these types of cases.
Yeah.
And this one is like kind of at my border. This one takes place in the mid 80s.
Okay.
Just because I don't know. I don't really want to cover stories where like family members are still alive.
Yeah, I get that.
And so it's possible that this guy has some family members or friends certainly probably are still alive. So this is kind of at the border of stuff I would cover.
Okay.
Like I'll probably never cover the Elisa Lam case. I've had a few people suggest covering, what was that? The Madeline McCann disappearance, mm-hmm. or the JonBenet Ramsey case.
She's always the one I think of when it comes to unsolved.
And I can confidently say I will never cover those cases because I'm a father of two young children and I just don't have that in me.
Yeah.
So, you know.
But if it's a best male friend, roughly 38 years old, you're like, let's go for it. His name is Evan. I don't care if they go missing.
Yeah, exactly. Today, we're going to be talking about a 35-year-old man going missing. So tonight, we are going to talk about the curious case of Don Kemp. I'm just assuming you've never heard that name before.
You are correct.
This isn't a super well-known missing persons case, but it was the first case ever covered on Unsolved Mysteries.
The TV show from... When did that even start?
I would imagine the 90s.
Yeah.
This is the first case on the first episode ever covered on that show. So that's a fun little tidbit for everyone.
Yeah, and you got to think they'll pick a banger to come out the gate, right?
Right.
Yeah.
And so Paul Donald Kemp Jr., he was born April 21st, 1947. And there's not really any information about his upbringing. I imagine he had a fairly normal life. When we jump into this story, in 1982, he's a 35-year-old advertising executive in New York City. He's working on Madison Avenue.
He's a madman.
I suppose, is that where that comes from?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Have you seen that show?
I've heard of that show, but I never made the connection of Madison Avenue. So yeah, so Don Kemp is a madman. And everything says, you know, he was living the classic urban professional life. And then in early 1982, he found himself in a terrible car accident that left him pretty physically injured. He had to be at the hospital for a while.
Okay.
His family, friends, people close to him said that he was really shaken emotionally from that also.
Mm-hmm.
And I imagine just based on where we're going with this right now, he had some sort of level of concussion, some level of TBI probably.
What is TBI?
TBI, traumatic brain injury.
Okay.
So like if you hit your head or like a concussion or something, you injure part of your brain, it's called a TBI.
Okay.
And so after he recovers physically and he's let out of the hospital and everything, he started getting really withdrawn, not wanting to do a whole lot with other people, which is the complete opposite of what someone working on Madison Avenue as an advertising executive is going to be, right?
Right.
And he also developed just a really deep interest, almost an obsession with the assassination of Abraham Lincoln.
Okay.
That became his, like, he became fixated on learning the history of it and all the details and everything. And shortly after this accident and getting out of the hospital, he decides, basically, I'm done with my old life. I am going to move to Jackson Hole, Wyoming.
Okay.
I'm going to live a solitary life, and I'm going to write a book about the assassination of Abraham Lincoln.
Big pivot.
Real big pivot there.
Yeah.
Complete opposite lifestyles that he's doing. And so then in late 1982, he loads up his Chevy Blazer and heads for the hills.
Okay.
I looked it up just out of curiosity. New York City to Jackson Hole, Wyoming is a 33-hour drive.
Not a quick one.
Multiple days.
I expected a nicer car, but I guess, do we know what level he was in his agency or wherever?
That's true.
I thought you were going to be like, in his Maserati.
In his Lambo.
Peace.
Well, he's following John Teeter with the Chevy.
There you go. Yeah, maybe that was his inspo.
Yeah. So 33-hour drive to get all the way to Jackson Hole, Wyoming. I imagine he'd made a few stops and everything. And at that time, some of his friends and family were reporting that, yeah, he's kind of emotionally unstable.
Mm-hmm.
He's feeling really disconnected from reality. But you also had another group of people that knew him saying that he was just reinventing himself. He was trying to recover from the trauma of the car accident. He was still the same Don. And so you have differing reports from people about exactly how different his personality and everything was after the accident.
Like whether he fully removed or not.
Right. So that's late 1982. And then this case really begins on November 15th of 1982. He has made it most of the way across the country, and he finds himself in Cheyenne, Wyoming.
Okay.
This is 6 hours and 45 minutes from Jackson Hole. So he's only got 7 hours of driving or so to get to his final destination.
Mm-hmm.
And on this day, on November 15th, he visits a museum in Cheyenne, Wyoming. It was a Western museum, like cowboys and that type of stuff.
Yeah.
And witnesses saw him. They said he looked through the museum. He kind of, you know, walked through silently for about 2 hours. He was there looking at stuff. And then he left. Pretty unassuming visit to the museum. However, when he left, he either accidentally or intentionally, we can't know, left a briefcase behind. And in the briefcase that he left behind were his diaries, traveler's checks, which is, you know, would be important for buying stuff back in the 80s.
Right.
His address book and his driving glasses.
I already feel like that's more on purpose if you leave.
Yeah, you would think, you know, if you're leaving your driving glasses behind, the second you get in the car, you're gonna be like, wait a minute.
I can't see.
Yeah, so glasses needed for driving. That's pretty important, right?
Yeah.
Address book, like his friends, his family, he had their addresses, phone numbers, names, everything written down. So that's like a pretty important thing to have with your person.
And his money.
And traveler's checks, yeah. And so the briefcase is left behind and it has, I would say, pretty vital stuff.
Yeah,
in it.
I would agree. Yeah.
He did reportedly call the museum later that day and say, hey, I left my briefcase. I'll be back to get it. But he never went back to the museum to get it.
Okay.
So that's on November 15th. Then the next day, November 16th, in the morning, Wyoming Highway Patrol officer is driving down Interstate 80. And he notices there is a Chevy Blazer off the side of the road, just sitting still kind of awkwardly. So he obviously stops, pulls over, goes to check this out. And this was in Carbon County, Wyoming. So this is about 2 hours, 15 minutes from Cheyenne. So obviously this is going to be Don Kemp's vehicle. So he drove at least 2 hours and 15 minutes away from the museum by the time all of this happened.
Mm-hmm. I don't suppose, do you know where his call to the museum came from? I guess there's no way to really tell, right? If he was like at a payphone on the side of the road and was he heading back to the museum or going away? Do we know any of those kind of details?
Going away. He was like going from Cheyenne to Jackson Hole.
But so it wasn't like the car was coming back to go get that briefcase.
No, it was faced heading away from the museum.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So he called and then still was like going away.
Just still, I'm just going to go where I'm going anyways.
Yeah. Keep going. Okay.
So he was found in Carbon County, Wyoming.
Mm-hmm.
I did my best to look up exactly where he was found or where the car was found, I should say. And if anybody is interested in like seeing what this area looks like, look up Elk Mountain, Wyoming. ELK Mountain, Wyoming. It's a very remote area.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a whole lot out there. And there's also not any tree coverage. It's just like sweeping plains.
Okay.
And this was happening in November, which is definitely the winter in Wyoming. And so even like the grasses or whatever would normally grow in those areas are not there.
That's when everything's just kind of brown and gross.
Yeah.
You clarified that it was the car they found. I take it he wasn't inside the car.
Right. And so they found the car, the Chevy Blazer. And when the officer came up to it, the engine was still running. The driver's side door was wide open. Radio still on. There was some clothing scattered about around the vehicle. And the vehicle was packed with all of Don's belongings. That's not to be unexpected. He was moving across the country. He's going to have the car packed full of stuff.
But if he left, he took nothing with him. Again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
It appears that he pulled the car off the road, got out, and walked away. Left the car running, left the door open, radios on, some clothes got scattered, but that's about it.
Yep.
There was no signs of another person. They said the car was packed to the point that a passenger couldn't have fit in the car. And so they did find one set of footprints leading away from the Blazer.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously investigators are going to follow the tracks. And about a mile away from the car, they find a duffel bag of Don's.
Okay.
In that duffel bag is some clothes, some laundry soap, and a teapot.
Because you never know when you might need a spot of tea.
A London fog. So that's found just sort of off to the side of where the tracks are. You know, at this point, they've got all sorts of people out there searching for Don.
Yep.
And about 6 miles away from the car and also 6 miles away from the highway, they find an abandoned barn. Inside that barn, they find some sticks and woods and shrubberies.
Shrubbery!
That have been arranged like someone would want to start a fire with them. There's no indication that a fire was started, but they were sort of arranged in a pile like someone would before starting a fire.
Okay.
They found three of Kemp's socks and no sign of him.
Okay.
And allegedly, there were no footprints leading away from the barn. Investigators at this point are really confused because there's nowhere else to track him. There's no other footprints or anything.
Yeah, the trail goes cold, right? Where else can you even...
Trail goes cold, right?
Yeah.
And so some people are of the mind that there's a second person with him and they doubled back in the footprints or something. That sounds a little unreasonable to me.
Yeah. 6 miles they did that.
Yeah, right. That's, oh my God. My hammies would be burning. So the search continues. We got to find this guy. Something weird's going on. Sorry, I'm drinking a Coke, so I'm burping a lot. I'm being a bad boy tonight.
Oh, yeah. You're caffeinating at this time of night as a parent in trouble?
I'm having a caffeine-free, zero-sugar Coca-Cola.
Oh, okay. There we go. There's the parent side.
Zero-sugar, caffeine-free Coca-Cola. The official soft drink of the Oddity Archive.
For when the real thing just can't happen.
So they're out there doing a really big search, and unfortunately, 3 days into this search, a severe blizzard comes through, and so they have to call off the search. They can't be out there searching in such severe conditions.
Yeah.
The temperatures become life-threatening, and unfortunately, they just have to kind of call it at that point.
Right.
Law enforcement concludes that he likely died of exposure before the blizzard, but even if he somehow survived, then he definitely died in the blizzard.
So when you said this was winter, I was like, oh yeah, it's like 30 degrees, but I guess if a blizzard comes through, it's probably...
And we're in Wyoming, so I'm going to look this up because that's something I need to know. Average temperature in Wyoming in November, 36 to 43. Nighttime drops to 19 to 24.
Do we have a moon phase for that time of year?
I will get you a moon phase. Moon phase. Any guesses? Any guesses?
Waxing gibbous.
Waxing crescent.
Ah! I'll take it, though. It's better than a waner.
Better than a waner. It looks like the next night was the new moon. So there's not a whole lot of moonlight. So during the blizzard, the sheriff's department, sheriff's name is C.W. Ogburn. He essentially does like a press briefing and says, you know, unfortunately, we had to call off the search. Kemp was most likely psychologically distressed and he may have been actively avoiding rescuers. And he didn't want to be found. He must have died of exposure. Police sort of just end it there. They don't continue searching for him anymore.
Okay.
This was a pretty big search. A lot of people on the ground. They also ran aircraft over the area to try and find him.
Right.
And like I said, this is a pretty wide open area. And so if you or I were in this part of Wyoming and we wanted to be found, wherever we're at, stand up tall as we can, wave our hands, an aircraft is going to be able to see us.
Right.
So Don's family is pretty critical of the police's investigation. They didn't take any fingerprints from the car. They said that they didn't preserve any footprints to see if they matched shoes that Don was known to have.
Mm-hmm.
They sort of just made a bunch of assumptions about his mental state. And so you're getting a lot of pushback from the family about how the police handled this.
Okay.
I think a large majority of families would handle this the same way.
Yeah, if you're dealing with trauma like that and...
Yeah, if you lose a loved one and the police aren't able to find them, a lot of people are going to blame the police for that.
Yeah, even if they're doing a pretty good job, I know plenty of people are going to be like, hey, there's more we can do.
Yeah.
Like, why aren't you doing everything possible?
Maybe the police did a terrible job in this case. Maybe they did a good job. I don't know. But the family not being happy with their job is kind of just expected either way.
Yeah, but we can't say whether it was or wasn't the case, I guess.
Right. That is sort of where the case ends until a few months later, Judy Aiello, A-I-E-L-L-O, she returns back. She was on a vacation in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
She comes back home and she has 6 messages on her answering machine. And so obviously she goes and she plays them. And one of them, she is adamant, was Don Kemp. And she said the voice was frightened, couldn't get the words out quick enough. Like this was an urgent message. Mm-hmm. And she said that Don left on the answering machine, "I must talk to you," and left the phone number to call back at.
And what was her relation to him?
So she was a good friend of Don's.
Do we know the timing of the call? Did it align with when he maybe called the, where did he leave his bag?
At the museum.
Oh, the museum. Yeah.
So it was definitely after his disappearance. So after his car was found.
Okay.
But she didn't get in until a couple months later because she was in Europe.
And not like now where you can, you know, listen to your voicemail or whatever. Pretty much at any time you want.
Yeah. So she gets that message. And so she's like, oh, okay. Well, maybe Don isn't gone. So she calls the number back and a man answers and she asks if Don is there. And the man kind of stumbles over his words and is like, well, yeah, you know, he's here. What? And she said, well, can I talk to him? And he's like, oh, no, Don's not here right now. He'll call you back later. And then hangs up.
Hmm.
And so Judy obviously is like, what? Excuse me?
And she didn't think it sounded like him or anything like that, right? This is somebody else.
She said the voice of the person that answered the phone was different from the voicemail.
Okay.
And she was adamant the voicemail was from Don Kemp.
Okay.
Now, a curious thing about that phone call is that Judy's number was not listed. Like, you used to have to open the white pages, find the name, match it up with the number.
Yeah.
Her number was not listed. So whoever called her had to have known her number.
Like from memory, right?
Yeah. Had to know her number by memory or had access to Don Kemp's address book.
Okay.
So one of those two things had to have happened for somebody to call her.
That's a good point. Okay.
But again, she's saying that was Don's voice on this phone.
Have you ever needed toilet paper that's extra strength?
I like 4-ply.
7-ply. I want to wipe with a towel. Introducing towel wipes. When toilet paper just won't doo-doo.
Now it comes in 400 grit, 200 grit, and for when you really got one, 50 grit.
That's called slap your mama towel, and you ain't even going to have a hole left.
Oh, my God. Okay, I don't think we can put that in.
Probably not at that moment.
Yeah, cut that and save it for another episode. Okay, where was I?
So Judy was unlisted. Whoever had her number either, had the number by heart or his book.
And so Judy, obviously, contacts police. It's like, hey, this guy that went missing called me. And the police traced the number to a trailer in Casper, Wyoming.
Oh.
Which is about 2 hours north of where Kemp disappeared. The trailer was owned and occupied by a man named Mark Dennis.
Two first names is never a good sign.
No, it's not. And so the police go, knock on Mark Dennis's door. He completely denies knowing Kemp. He denies making any phone calls. He says somebody else may have used his phone, but he certainly didn't make these phone calls. He is completely cooperative with police. He even goes into the police station, takes a polygraph. Police say he passes it, and the police clear him. They're like, we don't know what's going on with this phone call, but Mark Dennis was not involved.
Okay.
So he gets pretty quickly cleared by police.
So he never reported to police or anything like that, that he had a break-in to imply that maybe Don came in and used his phone out of desperation or...
He just claims no idea what happened. It wasn't me. I don't know Don. I've never talked to Don. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
Police clear him. But Don's mom, Mary, is convinced that Dennis was involved in her son's disappearance.
Did she say why? Or just the
Because of the phone call.
Yeah. Okay.
And then shortly after police get in touch with Mark Dennis, he hires an attorney and he moves away from Casper. And so the mom is like, well, that's suspicious.
Yeah.
Why would this guy do those things?
Right.
The other side of that coin is if somebody came knocking at my door accusing me of potentially murdering some guy, I'm going to be like, attorney, please.
Yeah, always. Yeah.
Right. And Mark refused to speak to Don's family directly.
That's not necessarily suspicious to me. That's just... you don't incriminate yourself on accident.
Right. And so those details are like one side highly suspicious, the other side kind of what a normal person would do if they were accused of murder.
Yeah. My thinking is always go straight to the lawyer, regardless of the charge, and then say nothing.
Yeah.
Just to like make sure you're good. But, you know.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, you could go either way. And so some of the thinking about that phone call is that somehow it was Don, or somebody got a hold of his briefcase that he left at the museum, pulled a really sick prank. And like picked a number out of the address book, called it, acted like they were Don in distress, and set that whole thing into motion.
Yeah.
So those are the two thoughts on the phone call, but definitely an odd twist to the story.
Yeah. I mean, it sounded like he was traveling with like a ton of money too, right? If it's like a pile of traveler's checks. So there is some draw there for somebody to be like, oh, if I either find the briefcase, but I don't know why you would call. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
My wheels are already going. I'm like, how do I combine all this?
And then the following year in 1983, in April, there are two alleged sightings of Don. The first is a bartender named Mary said that she distinctly remembers Don coming into her bar and serving him some drinks, maybe some food, normal interaction as far as a customer at a bar goes.
Is she in Wyoming or is she like on Madison Avenue and he's like back in town? Like, where does she see him?
So these are at Casper, Wyoming, which is the same area that the trailer that Mark Dennis had was.
Okay.
Good point there. And so bartender named Mary, confident that she served Don at her bar. And then another witness, again, also in April of 1983, claims that they saw Don at a traveling exhibit of Abraham Lincoln memorabilia in Casper, Wyoming.
It's on brand.
Yeah, which really fits. And I don't know to what extent, you know, him being really into Abraham Lincoln was broadcast in the news, that somebody would know to make that up. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So two separate reports of seeing him. But I mean, that is 100% on brand for what he was doing in Wyoming. It was Abraham Lincoln stuff.
Yeah.
And so that's April 1983. And then everything goes cold. There's no more news, no more sightings, no more information until October of 1985.
Okay.
At that point, a few hunters in Wyoming are out getting ready to hunt some, I don't know what, big game. Some elk.
Sure.
Or something. I don't know what you hunt in Wyoming, but elephants?
Yeah, out in Wyoming, you know, they frolic around out there.
So some hunters are out getting ready to hunt something, and they find some skeletal remains, which turn out to be Don's.
Okay.
These remains are found just a few miles from where his vehicle had been abandoned 3 years prior. So it was well within the search area.
Was there any sign of trauma?
No, the remains were pretty decomposed. Mm-hmm. It was just down to the skeleton at that point.
So nothing suspicious they could pull from just what they saw there?
No.
Okay.
Basically, they could just identify him and that was about it. But he was well within the search area. Investigators were confident that that area had been searched before. Hmm. And his remains were not concealed in any way. They weren't like under a tarp or under a pile of leaves or anything. They were just sort of out in the open.
Yeah.
They said that the aircraft that helped in the search should have easily been able to see Don laying out there.
Yeah, and I think just because my brain naturally keeps thinking, oh, we're out in the wilderness, there's all this like cover and stuff, but as you pointed out, it is like a desolate field.
Yeah, not a lot of cover.
So
yes,
almost anything should stand out that isn't just old brown grass.
Right. Like any pop of color is going to stand out in that area.
Right.
Yeah. So a little bit of confusion there. Body was found in somewhere that had been well searched. His wallet and identification were near the body. And the police essentially say this is evidence that there wasn't any foul play and that he passed away in the blizzard.
Which is convenient for them, given that they didn't find him in the search area that they supposedly looked at.
Right.
Sure.
Yeah. I will say that I feel like sensationalized takes on this case will give the details that when his body was found, it was fully intact, like he had recently died, and there were weird things that were found during the autopsy and everything. That is completely fabricated for drama.
Okay.
As best I can tell, I couldn't find any legitimate sources talking about any of that stuff. Everything that I read that seemed like a legitimate source reported skeletal remains.
Well, so I feel like there's probably plenty of missing people stories. Did this one catch on, like, as far as being like a national story and everybody kind of dialing in on it?
I think really, you know, going back to the very beginning, I think really the reason people know about this case is because it was on Unsolved Mysteries.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, gotcha. It was the first thing on that. And that was, I mean, I don't know what year it was on it, but it was probably a number of years after his body had been found.
Right, right, right.
And so, you know, it kind of captured people's attention. A lot of missing persons cases are the person went missing. This is the state they left things in, and we haven't found any trace of them. With this case, there were the wrinkles of the phone calls, the alleged sightings, him being found in the search area, all those kind of things, you know, add to the narrative.
Yeah, yeah.
And so it goes beyond just like a normal missing persons case.
Yeah. And I wasn't trying to challenge it being brought up. Just, I was curious how like widespread the story got, because it's in just such niche communities.
Yeah.
But yeah, I forgot it was like the pilot episode of that show that became very big. So everybody probably, once they saw that episode, started doing their own digging. And then that's when everybody kind of starts making their conclusions and all that stuff. So that makes sense.
Yeah. And to your point, before that aired, I don't think this was like national news or anything. I think it was still just like a local story.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, something like Unsolved Mysteries airs, millions of people see it, and it turns into something. So that leads us to theories.
Yeah.
And I got four of them.
I figure with a true crime one, we'll be a little more based.
I mean, we can end with aliens if you want to.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm always up for that. So the first one is essentially what the police claim, that he had some sort of psychological breakdown, left the car, and wasn't trying to get himself killed, but ended up dying of exposure just because of the weather and the desolate nature of the area. They said that he probably had some sort of severe trauma, whether physical or just emotional, after the car accident. And this was just all like a really unfortunate event that culminated in him dying of exposure.
Yeah.
Theory two is that this was all in a way planned by him, and he went to Wyoming and he abandoned his car and he wandered into the wilderness in order to kill himself. The stuff against that would be there was no sort of note that was left.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody that knew him had any indication of any suicidal ideations.
Also, just a weird place to pick to, like, I'm going to drive across most of the United States and then wander out into this field.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you're in some state of psychosis or, you know, mental trauma or physical trauma from an accident or whatever happened.
Yeah. Then the third theory is some sort of foul play happened. Somebody maybe followed him from the museum, or maybe he had been in touch with somebody, maybe this Mark Dennis character, and someone ended up killing him in order to maybe steal the traveler's checks or whatever other reason you would have for wanting to murder someone.
Right.
But it was foul play, that this was a murder scene and someone killed him for one reason or another.
Right.
I'm going to get this wrong, but there were some reports that, like, of all of his stuff that was found, all of his research into the assassination of Abraham Lincoln was gone, was missing from his stuff. So, like, someone killed him to take his research or something. It got a little convoluted, so I didn't really go down that rabbit hole, but there was some sort of angle of, like, he was killed because of his research on Abraham Lincoln. And, you know, just make that make sense to yourself.
I can't, but okay.
And then the fourth theory is that he survived for some amount of time after the blizzard. Maybe he did live with Mark Dennis for a while. Maybe he was in Casper, Wyoming for a while, did go to that bar, did go to the traveling Abraham Lincoln exhibit, and was, you know, living his life in Casper, Wyoming for some amount of time.
Yeah.
And then for some reason went back and died a few miles from his car.
Feels like a jump.
The whole case is very confusing because, you know, you have these reports in Casper, alleged phone calls, alleged sightings of him. Mm-hmm. That's 2 hours away from where his car was found. But then he is found dead a few miles from his car. And so he would have had to come back, or somebody murdered him in Casper and took him back. You know, that fourth theory, the only way it makes sense to me is if, like, the whole thing with the car happened one way or another, he ends up with Mark Dennis in Casper, Wyoming. Mark Dennis, you know, gets the heat from the police. Mm-hmm. They start their investigation. They end up clearing him. And then one way or another, Don Kemp dies.
Yeah.
And Mark Dennis is like, well, this isn't good. Let me, like, take the heat off myself, transports the body back and, like, plants it somewhat near the car, and then just goes back to Casper. For number four to work, it's something like that. Like, no ill intent on Mark Dennis's part. Just, you know, he knows
this is a bad look. How do I make sure I'm not the one who goes down?
Exactly. Like, I didn't kill this guy. Like, he maybe had an accident. Maybe he got ill or something.
Yeah.
And he dies. And Mark Dennis is like, I got to do something with this body.
I mean, he's kind of like the crux of this whole thing to me.
Yeah.
Like, that's the phone number that called. And from the sound of it, Don was in some state of distress for his call to Judy. So when he called Judy, he's like, I need to talk to you. I wonder if it was like, Mark Dennis is crazy as shit. And I got to get out of this trailer.
I need some help. Yeah.
Or it's like, I'm in mental psychosis and I need, like, you're right. Someone I trust. So do you know how close him and Judy were? I mean, they must have been, if that's his one call from out there, right?
Close enough. I mean, think about how many people, you know, if they left you a voicemail with no context and no number attached to it, you would immediately know who's talking on the other end of the phone.
Yeah. It's like 10 people.
Family, few friends.
Yeah.
Not a lot. Like, outside of family.
Because I'm not very popular.
Like, outside of close family, not a ton of people I would recognize immediately by voice.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so she had to have known him pretty well.
And that's the only known call out from.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so again, her number was unlisted.
Yeah.
So whoever made that phone call either knew her number by heart or had Don Kemp's address book.
Was he married or anything? Did we?
Manic?
Was he married?
No, Don Kemp was not.
If he was married, he would be manic, but I was just curious if.
No. He was not married. He was single.
Okay.
But the other aspect of that phone call that's really confusing to me is that, let's say it was a prank call. Let's say some idiot teenager got a hold of the briefcase, got a hold of the address book, and is like, oh, I'm going to call Judy and act like I'm Don, right?
Yeah.
If you're pranking someone like that, you wouldn't then proceed to say the phone number to call you back at.
Is that how they traced it?
Yeah.
I was thinking they were able to, like, look at phone records.
On the voicemail.
Oh, it was like, call me back at this number.
Yeah, it was like, I need help. Call me at this number. Like, it's literally just a voice on a tape.
Yeah,
there's no number attached to it in any sort of way. So the person leaving the message would have to leave their number also.
Hmm.
So for the prank caller to, like, leave the number to call back, that doesn't make sense to me.
And the reach that you would have to make is, say it was Don on the phone calling, to then leave a number that just happens to be a local number in that area by his car. That's a bit of a jump to make.
Right. Like, 2 hours away, Casper, Wyoming.
Yeah. I mean, could you name any other area code and where it's at other than your own?
I mean, I could name, like,
within a handful.
Yeah, I could name, like, the three Virginia area codes, and that's like 804, 757, and 540.
Yeah.
But that's it, right? Like,
you did have to kind of memorize phone numbers a little more back then, but it doesn't sound like that was, I mean, he's a madman on Madison Avenue. He's not probably privy to the area codes in Casper, Wyoming, or wherever it was to...
I'm just trying to figure out how a prank caller could make sense. So a prank caller would have to get access to his address book, pick out Judy. That's easy enough, whatever. Mm-hmm. Call the number, act in distress, and then they could rattle off a number just making stuff up, right?
Yeah.
And then it just happens to be Mark Dennis in Casper, Wyoming.
And she said it was him, though, right? Like, the voice she's claiming was Don.
Yeah, she's saying the voice was Don.
So the odds of somebody picking a random number out, them being close enough to be like, oh, it sounds exactly like him, unless it's an amazing doppelganger in the middle of, you know,
and picking a
Wyoming
random number out that's 2 hours from where the car was found and the same town where the two alleged sightings of Don happened.
Yeah.
There's a lot of coincidences in that.
So I think this is one where honestly the theories feel a little more straightforward, as in they're all just like have their lane.
Yeah.
And it's not like it was swamp gas or a sandhill crane,
right,
or a goblin. So, yeah, I don't know. I'm kind of curious to hear your take first on this one.
So this is a case where, like, my brain wants to believe theory number one, where he was just in some sort of psychological distress, was not doing well, stopped the car, got out and just wandered away and died of exposure.
Yeah.
And, you know, the blizzard came 3 days later. Maybe he was trying to avoid the searchers. I don't know.
And that feels like the most straightforward.
Yeah. And he dies of exposure. But the phone call does not make any sense to me. I cannot make sense of that phone call. Mm-hmm. Like I said, even if it's a prank caller that knows Don Kemp went missing and knows, like, this is a cruel joke, but I'm going to do it anyways. I'm going to call a good friend of his and act like I'm Don.
Yeah.
You wouldn't then still leave your number to call back, right?
Yeah. Well, and also, in theory, the area the police searched,
he should have been found.
And they said no. So there is like a kind of a weird, what do we make of that in theory one?
Yeah.
Like psychological breakdown.
Right.
Mixed with, you know, police ineptitude.
Right.
Is kind of a, you know, like they would have seen him. He's like in an open field. But if they did their job correctly, and we can only assume.
Yeah, look up this part of Wyoming. Elk Mountain, Wyoming. Just put that in Google Maps and like drop your little dude.
My little dude.
Drop the little yellow dude.
He's a normal sized dude, for the record.
He's actually probably massive because he's like bigger than the load.
My red pin man.
Red pin man.
Little red pin man. Elk Mountain,
Wyoming.
Wyoming.
Yeah.
What is Wyoming? W-Y?
Yeah. And like, you know, get onto like a street view.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
you'll
yeah
see.
Especially in winter. Yeah, it's like
there's nothing there.
The mountain looks super cool. And then it's just like brown grass fields.
Yeah, there's some rolling hills and stuff, but like terrible for hide and seek.
Unless your skin tone is very sandy.
Right.
Which luckily for me. Yeah, like you would stand out. There's like cows I'm seeing grazing or.
Right.
Yaks or whatever they do out that area. I guess elk probably should have been my
first guess.
It looks beautiful though. It's a pretty area.
It looks nice, but like you would have to try to hide there.
I'm curious how a trailer park would even function.
Well, that was in Casper.
Was it a trailer park or was it just like a farmer with like a trailer and he just like he had a ton of land and had a trailer on
I it? Don't know. I mean, you could look up Casper, Wyoming and
okay, so a little bit of a town.
Yeah, a little bit
here
of a town.
In Casper.
So not as desolate as where his car went missing.
Okay. Yeah, so there's like a little downtown area, kind of like a little valley town.
Yeah.
We've talked about those in the past where it's like there's a whole bunch of nothing.
Right.
And then this one little kind of Americana city pocket. And mm-hmm. It looks like it's kind of that kind of vibe.
Yeah. So where do you land on this one? Where's your mind going?
I'm kind of, I think, where you're at, where especially knowing advertising is a high stress job. Speaking for others, not myself, if my boss is listening. But I think Madison Avenue marketing man was like cutthroat back in the day and super high stress job, probably a whole lot of like drug abuse and just like crazy stuff happening in the office.
Yeah. Especially in the 80s.
Yeah. So imagine it was like cocaine going everywhere and whatever else. And if you don't fit the vibe, or maybe you do and then dive too deep in. There's a science that says, like, if you are predisposed to mental illness, if you do a lot of drugs and whatever, alcohol, like, mm-hmm. you may bring those symptoms on a lot sooner, basically puts on the fast track. So I could see psychological breakdown for sure. High stress job. It's in a crazy industry with, like, wild and out people just living to an 11.
Yeah. And then add in the traumatic car accident.
Yeah. And then, so what was the state of his car that they found, though? Was it like
during the accident?
Yeah. Do we know how bad his car was messed up from that?
I don't know specifics on that. Just that it was bad enough that, like, he had to be in the hospital for a while.
Yeah.
And, like, allegedly his personality changed afterwards.
But I know there's people who will have an accident or some kind of brain injury and, like, yeah, their personality just straight up changes. And how could it not? Like, your brain is what kind of controls all that, right? So,
right,
as much as I don't want to even it up, like, it could be could be like a combination thing where it's like he has burnout or whatever, wants to leave his industry and get as far away from it as possible. He's also just trying to navigate some, like, mental health issues. It's just like, I keep coming back to the phone call from that trailer or the phone number he gave.
Yeah. Where do you land on the phone call? Because that's the thing that I can't make sense of.
Yeah. I mean, I don't buy the suicide thing. I think if he wanted to do that, it would have been much more simple. Yeah, and if you're that depressed, I don't think you're going to, like, go 30 hours across the U.S., right? It's going to be more simple. You're not going to
wander
like,
into a
go
field.
Through all that. Yeah. And then wander into an empty field. I mean, it's very poetic, I guess, but not very realistic.
Right.
I think for foul play, and maybe that's why this is like the case that it is that kind of hooks people's attention is the phone number given, it's nearby, it's Mark Dennis, two first names, again, huge red flag, but also the body was just kind of like set somewhere. Like, if you or me need to dispose of a body, which we do, like, aren't you going to dig a hole or whatever? Like, I know it's remote, but it wasn't really near the trailer. I wouldn't just, like, set it down. I would, like, bury it or
cover
something
it, right?
To at least. And considering he pieced out of town immediately when called,
yeah,
probably the paranoid type or just, right, you know, overwhelmed. I don't know. But
like, if God forbid, few days, maybe a week go by, and then I found the hamster in a different state. Like, sure. I'm not just going to toss it in the yard, you know. I'm going to cover it in some sort of way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
I'm going to be respectful. Yeah. So I don't know. I guess this all just leads to the, he was killed over his passion for Lincoln.
Killed over his passion for Lincoln.
And I think that might be where it's just the phone numbers that, like,
right,
poke in the back of the head. So you also said there's, like, that barn. Looks like somebody's tried to start a fire.
Yeah.
Like,
they arranged a fire. I think three of his socks were found and no other tracks.
I assume two on his feet, one on his hand to talk to him and keep him company while he's trying to start this fire.
No sign of him and allegedly no tracks leaving the barn.
So if I have to pick, I think I'm on, like, psychological breakdown and exposure.
Yeah. That's where I'm at too. And I'm just, like, choosing to ignore the phone call.
Yeah.
Like, because I can't make it make sense. So my brain's like, eh, let's just not even worry about it.
So wherever Mark Dennis is these days, he's probably like, sweet. Thank
let's
God.
Let's try calling him.
Yeah. Hey, man, did you, what were you up to in the 80s around November of 82, 83? Yeah. I mean, that's just the only thing I think I keep coming back to that makes the most sense.
Yeah, I think we've discovered why Unsolved Mysteries chose this case, because it is an unsolved mystery. I don't think.
And it's easy to let your brain run wild, which I think is the problem with a lot of this stuff, yeah, is without concrete evidence, the general public, including us, is able to just wander free. But at least I think we try to distill down to what logically could play out.
Right. All right. I think that's a good landing spot for us. I'm going to work on, this will be episode 4.
Yeah.
I got to get a cryptid episode in. I want to get some sort of alien episode in this season. And then I'm working on a real cryptid or poorly scripted episode. I think we're going to amp it up a little bit.
Yeah.
And it's going to be a competition. I'm going to have a guest on and it's going to be you v him.
Do we know who him is or we got to wait?
Yeah, so my friend Alex, said that he would come on the podcast. And he, as far as I know...
Is he going to just straight up embarrass me?
No. So as far as I know, he's not in the cryptid world at all.
So level playing field. That's good. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, it's level playing field. I think he would be a good competitor for you in that space. So
you said that with a tone, but I won't read too deep into that.
So I'm trying to make that work, but we'll see.
We'll see what happens. But my mom is actively now pursuing being a guest on our show.
I'm here for it. No, maybe we can go live from King's Corner.
Yeah. We'll just have a cryptid talk over some pulled pork, some mac and cheese.
There we go.
Yeah. I can't think of an episode that will go more
so
sideways.
Tune in,
than that.
Guys. Evan's mom is going to come on the podcast. We've got a couple guests lined up this season.
And also, he's been kind of in his cage for a bit, but Ottoman
caged now.
Keeps passing me notes through the grating saying he wants to host. We'll see how that goes, but he wants to do some sort of thing. I don't know. We'll see how he behaves for the next week or two and then kind of go from there.
Okay. All right, folks, send me an email, oddityarchivepodcast@gmail.com. Follow us on Instagram, oddityarchivepodcast. Send me a message, you know, whatever you want. Shoot me some recipes for
cryptid soup.
There we go.
Whatever that
leg of squatch.
Guys, David couldn't make it tonight. He's wildly ill. Yeah, but reach out. David's lonely. I don't talk to him enough. He needs your emails, messages. Please, he's starting to break down at the end of this episode. He's crying. I don't know. Maybe we'll pivot to me and Ottoman. But as always, thanks for listening, and we'll
see you on the next one. No. I am David Stuhldreher, creator and host. The show is edited by my co-host, Evan Miller. Theme music done by Sean Bullock. You can follow him at Sean Bullock Video on Instagram. All original artwork done by Tannis. You can follow her at Tannis Tattoos on Instagram as well. Thank you for listening.